League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Friends, welcome to a Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits. I'm Mark Heath. I'm joined by my two young, youthful, good-looking friends today. And friends, shall we start with bad news, good news? Bad news, Ipswich Town could be relegated on Sunday. Could be. It's a long shot, but could be. Good news, they didn't lose yesterday. They played pretty bloody well. We've got a respectable draw from Chelsea, which means they will go down with Chelsea not beating them, not undefeated record against Chelsea. And also, friends, Rory McIlroy won the Masters last night. And that's where I've got to start, because I must apologise for not being at my sparkling best today. I was commentating in Colchester on Saturday night, so that was 7.5 hours of consecutive talking with two very frenzied runs to the toilet for a comfort stop in between fights. You don't get breaks. Just got a sprint to the bog and back. And then obviously I got back late. And then last night I had to stay up and watch Rory McIlroy, because it was a wonderful story. It was true sporting drama playing out at the beautiful Augusta course, which is like a dream, isn't it? So I'm not my sparkling best today, but hopefully my two friends will be. AJ, first of all, you weren't with us last week. You were just telling me you were sat in a hot tub all week, which sounds lovely. So you were on your holidays. How was it? Where were you? Tell us all about it.
It was very nice, thank you. Yeah, I went up to Lincolnshire. Lincoln's where I went to uni, so I had a couple of days there, Monday, Friday. And it's really weird because Lincoln, I remember being it was all right. It was okay. It was a little bit run down in places. And I've gone back a few years later, not even that long since. And it's totally been redone, which is really scary. It's like modern.
They've redone Lincoln.
Yeah, they've wow. redone Lincoln, basically. It's all done up. It's all snazzy and posh and fancy shops. And it was a little bit jarring, but quite nice as well. So that was good. And then we went down the road about 45 minutes to a place in Woodhall Spa. I'm going to give them a shout out because they Sounds deserve posh. It. Because it's really good. Called Banelands, which we found. We ended up booking this one quite late, but looked at it, thought the price was okay. Booked it, and it was brilliant. It was really, really good. And they have these cabins throughout this little park that they've got, ranging from ones where you just have a couple of people to, like, they have these like massive houses where you can have about 20 plus people and you can have private chefs and all sorts and private swimming pools. So yeah, lots of different bits and pieces. We just had the one for two, which was nice to have a hot tub on the deck outside and just literally get out of bed and shower and go into the hot tub like that. That was really good. We'll be starting a crowdfunding petition to get a hot tub in my garden as well. Yeah. And I assume that pay rises will be in order to help fund that one in the coming days.
No.
So that was nice. And just being able to go swim and do lots and bits and pieces and relax for a week was really, really good. Thank you. So yeah, enjoyed it and had great weather for it.
Excellent. Well, it's good to have you back. Your work husband, of course, now rotates because it is Easter holiday. So Stu's off this week. He's got a big, obviously he's moving house today. So he's got a big week ahead of him. Some nice weather for it. Rossi, you had a little glint in your eye when AJ referred to being in the hot tub. I know exactly what you were thinking, my friend, and let's not take it any further. How are you? Have you recovered from the serious bout of sniffles that you were suffering when we last spoke?
No, things actually got worse. I was fine yesterday at Chelsea, and then I woke up this morning just, coughing and, spluttering. And I've got two victims that I've given it to. So sorry to Sasha and her mum. They've got it, and probably sorry to Joe, Wazza, Julie, James, and Saj, who I travelled with to Chelsea with. So they've probably got it now as well. So just adding to the list of victims. So yeah, sorry about that, guys.
A super spreader in Rossi. Right then, friends, shall we start by talking about this game? Let's be honest. I know Ross, you keep predicting wins, but I'm not sure how much you're actually expecting that to play out yesterday. Certainly, I was surprised by what happened at Stamford Bridge. I wasn't expecting that at all. Should we start with you, AJ? Where do you want to start? And then we'll hear from Kieran McKenna. Give us your opening thoughts on this impressive draw, which could, of course, be more. We'll get on to that in due course.
Yeah, bit weird, wasn't it, in a way? And I think Kieran McKenna referenced that one after the game. In that Town, for the first half, essentially got battered. They were under the cosh, facing all sorts of shots. Chelsea at the post. They were flooding bodies forward. And Town at half-time, and I love this stat so much, had four touches in Chelsea's box, and two of them were goals, which I just think is great and just kind of sums up how it went. But those opportunities that Town had to get forward, they were clinical. And we've not seen that often this season, have we, where they get their chances and they take their chances, because that's what you have to do in the Premier League, because the opponents probably are going to have more quality to come back into the game and get a result. That's ultimately what Chelsea did. But then you're leaving Stamford Bridge with a 2-2 draw. Chelsea have the fourth best home record in the Premier League. And you've been feeling really happy. So, yeah, I think that, again, it's one of those where if this was earlier in the season, it would feel absolutely brilliant, wouldn't it, if the Town had gone to Stamford Bridge and won. It still should. I think I was feeling still a bit dejected after Sunday, because I clocked that Wolves had won, and I was like, how have they drawn at Chelsea? And the gap has got wider. Mm. But, yeah, look, we can't fixate on the gap, can we? And at this point, it's about focusing on the performances and what Town can do in the final few games. And this was a really good sign. I really like this performance and the game as a whole.
Spoken just like Kieran McKenna would talk about it. So let's hear from him now, and then we'll get your thoughts, Rossi. So here's Kieran after the game yesterday.
Kieran, obviously, two goal lead drop, but the reaction from the away fans at the end, I think, is a big point of your side's performance today. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think the reaction was deserved, and I thought the players, again, and the supporters done themselves proud, to be honest. It was, we knew it was going to be a really difficult game. We know that we're coming into it in a challenging, not just league position and stuff like that, but availability and injury and things, and playing against a fully motivated and almost full-strength Chelsea. So it was always going to be tough. The scorelines probably didn't always go with the flow of the game. So, you know, first half, we certainly weren't at our best with the ball, and it probably looked like there was a bit of nervousness in there, to be honest, at the start of the game. But we were really, really clinical, took our moments fantastically well, executed in the areas that we wanted to execute in the game plan. And we defended with a lot of resilience and probably a little bit of luck, to be honest. The second half, I actually thought we played better than the first half, and we had more chances, and it was, for lots of the second half, a pretty even game, both teams pushing for the goals. So, yeah, we're disappointed to concede right from kickoff. That was a big setback, but I think the response to it was very, very good. And actually, from that moment, you know, it can end up a really, really difficult second half. It was actually, I think, until Sancho's goal, a pretty even second half, and we looked as likely to get the third goal as they did the second goal. Of course, a brilliant moment from Jaden to score and make it 2-2, and then both teams were going for the win. It took a couple of great saves from Alex Palmer, to be fair, but we had our moments going up the other end, and was a really good game, and the players give everything to it again, and I think they can be proud of their efforts.
Was about right?
Yeah, I think Chelsea had the better chances over the game, but I think it's always going to be that. But yeah, I think for the amount of chances that we created, the quality of our chances for an away team, I think we deserve something from the game. And yeah, we could have won it at the end, we could have lost it at the end, and I think for us to compete with Chelsea as we have over the two games is you know, testament to the group.
All right then, Rossi. So, as I say, they'll be undefeated no matter what happens against Chelsea this season. How are you reflecting on this, though? Because there's two ways looking at it, isn't there? That, oh, good point at Chelsea. You know, deep, very good home record. Fantastic display. Or there's also the, well, they were 2-0 up and they didn't win. So how are you feeling about it?
Cliche klaxon time.
Yes.
Story of the season. You know, fine margins and all that. Yeah, when we were 2-0 up, I was like, yeah, we're staying up, boys.
Doing it. I mean, that would be a stretch, yeah.
But... And then I looked at the half-time result at Wolves, and they're winning 2-0 as well, and I thought, oh, okay, that's over with then. But, you know, the players, you know what? Like, they stepped up against a team who are fighting for Champions League football. And there's obviously lots of money in their team, a lot of money on their bench, a lot of money in their... in the back of the team, you know, not even on the match day squad. So, yeah, the boys did themselves proud, really did, you know, a bit of grit, termination, all that jazz, all those words you throw out. But then you do go back to, they were 2-0 up. And annoyingly, they conceded 18 seconds into the second half, which I think was that's what switched the game straight away. Although it did take a while for Chelsea to get an equaliser. But yeah, I predicted a win because I just felt, I don't know, something was in the air. You know, us to maybe get a double this season against somebody, because I don't think we'll be able to get a double against anybody else now. I don't think there's been another win against anybody, because Tottenham didn't happen. Yeah, obviously didn't happen. Chelsea didn't happen. And then what's the other win?
Bournemouth, but they already lost to them.
Yeah, but lost. So that's over with. But yeah, that's the frustrating, because how many points is it now? Like 27 points, something like that, dropped from like winning positions. So yeah, that is something we'll probably look back at the end of the season, going, if we didn't drop those sort of points, we could have been, Europa League or something. But yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Another cliche. We'll talk about the drop points in due course. Let's go back to start of the game, though, AJ. And I guess we have to start with the lineup, because there were a couple of eyebrows raised, obviously, when the team sheet is released at whatever it was, 12:45, wasn't it, yesterday? And there's no Liam Delap. Delap is on the bench. George Hurst starting. Now, clearly, we'd been talking about the potential for, or the argument for, things like that to be happening with Town heading towards the drop and Delap likely to be off. So at first sight, you think, maybe that's what they're doing, but that's not actually the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everyone just assumed that with Chelsea being linked with Liam Delap so much, they just wanted to kind of like hide him in the basement a little bit.
Doesn't exist.
Push him away. Yeah, Liam who? And then all of a sudden Chelsea bid 30 million for George Hurst instead. So that was kind of, with the injury, I know McKenna had spoken about it in the build-up. Delap hadn't trained that much. We found that it was a rib issue. And with that, in fairness, something that McKenna said, most players, he said, wouldn't have been on the bench because he was really in quite a lot of discomfort, had quite a lot of pain with it. But he is the epitome of the tough cookie, isn't he, Liam Delap? He is a tough old boy who will play through whatever pain barriers he needs to, really. And that at least got him onto the bench. But I think that Town are in a position where, as I've kind of said before, I don't feel like the drop-off in quality levels, albeit they're totally different strikers between Liam Delap and George Hurst, is so huge that you're going to massively feel it. And it allowed Town to do something a little bit different in the final third, which was good. I like that. That was good to see George Hurst get another start, especially on a stage like this at Stamford Bridge, and play a big part in a couple of goals. Leif Davis coming in as well was one that I think was kind of, it's always going to happen when he came back from his injury, that that was going to be one where he's going to be preferred to Connor Townsend, even if the performance is potentially, when you look at Townsend, have been really, really good. Davis is the man. He's 25 now, just signed a long-term deal, and is someone that Town will want to have for the long, long-term future, hopefully. So getting him extra minutes in the Premier League was always going to be likely. And other than that, the team kind of picked itself quite a lot. We had Jack Clark coming in as well. Great to see Ben Johnson starting again, and Ciso through the 10. Morsy and Kiusta kind of feels like it'll be the partnership now, I'd say, between now and the end of the season. Good to grow the O'Shea and Burgess defensive partnership as well, and to have Axel there. So that all worked out quite well. Good options on the bench. I think one of the interesting things as well is when you think about Town's attack, you'd probably say that the biggest threats they've got in the squad, full stop, would be Delap, Sammy Smodics and Amari Hutchinson. None of them on the pitch to start this game at all. And yet, half an hour in, Town have done quite a lot of attacking work. So yeah, it's a team game, isn't it?
You've teed me up nicely there, AJ. I will say, by the way, going back to the rib injury, we don't know what Delap's done to his rib, do we? It's just a reference to the rib injury.
It was from the Wolves game, what we know. It was one that he picked up from that, but we don't know exactly how it happened. I don't think any of us saw it, but it was from the game.
Well, from personal experience, I can tell you, because I cracked a rib once in a scrap, got a knee in the ribs, and it's one of the most painful things I've ever had, because it gets, normally when you hurt, you sort of lie down and recover, but it's actually more painful lying down. You can't breathe. That breaking a collarbone and knee surgery, I would say, are my top three pains in my life so far, friends, if you're asking. So Liam Delap, so you're playing football with a cracked rib, as I say, assuming that's what it is, kudos to him. He must have had a shot of something to null that pain, because that's the last thing I would want to be doing when I had my damaged rib. Rossi, enough of me. Town got two goals against their run of players, as AJ's just teed up. And they were good goals as well, weren't they? In Ciso. And then Ben Johnson. And I like the way there was the symmetry with the provider switching to scorer.
Yeah, it's nice that. And yeah, I've just watched back just this morning, the first goal especially, because that was a good sort of run of play and, you know, George Hurst sort of starting it and then got it to Ben Johnson. And yeah, Ben Johnson then cut it back into and see. So with a nice little toe punt, would you say a toe punt? A little bit of a toe punt, yeah.
Elements of a toe punt, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good to see Julio with his first goal for the club. And then, yeah, Ben Johnson, where I will admit I did miss this live because I was sending photos through to the boys and I looked up and went, oh, the ball's in the back of net. Ben Johnson's going celebrating the other way. But yeah, good to see Ben Johnson on the score sheet as well, because once again, going into this game, I think there's only 12 different goal scorers for Town. Now it's gone up to 14. So that's a nice little thing, because this team normally spreads the goal about. We've obviously just been relying on Liam Delap this year, but good to see two different goal scorers on the goal score sheet. There you go. But yeah, two good goals. And I was still in shock, though, I'll admit. I was like, it's just winning 2-0. What's going on? But yeah, Ben Johnson, I think we've got to have a chat about, because he's been fantastic. Had a tough start to life at Town, but the last few months he's been really stepping up and doing really well. And next season, I think it's going to be very important.
Well, that is exactly what I want to talk about next, Rossi. So fair play. Ben Johnson then, AJ. He's someone who had a tough start. A lot of people were kind of writing him off, which I know we should know better than, given the history of players maybe not having the best starts at Ipswich Town and turning it around. But then he's been getting better and better. And, he's been playing in this wide right role as well. What have you made of him? You spoke to him after the game, didn't you, as well?
I think he's been brilliant since he's come back in. I think that he's probably had quite a lot of pressure on his shoulders, knowing that he's had this opportunity. I can't remember what the game was he came back in. Was it Bournemouth when he first came back into the team? Yeah, it would have been the Bournemouth game. So he's had some games now where he's had to essentially take his opportunity. Town don't have the options on the wide right. McKenna, I think, doesn't want kind of a natural wing-backy role there because he wants to attack. But he's now at a point where he's seen what Johnson can do going forward as well. And, I mean, he's more than proven that he's capable from these last three games. Of course, it's a small sample size. But I think that consistently over the last few months, I can't think of kind of poor games that he's had. And a lot of fans, their memories will go back to the West Ham game against his former team, where he really struggled in a right-back role in that game. And he found it really, really hard. And since then, I think that he's come on leaps and bounds. He's been pretty consistent. And now he's starting to turn good, consistent performances into really top performances, which I really like. Suits the right-sided role perfectly. He basically plays as far up the pitch as George Hurst does. He's almost the furthest forward. And a lot of the times you see Town getting up the pitch. Does really well for the first one to just break past Cucurella and just get that space, because he's under a lot of pressure, and to be able to find that gap around the side and get the ball in to the box, really, really good. And then the header as well, to be in that position. I don't think he's scored that many headers. I mean, he's not scored that many goals. The last one was October 2021 for West Ham at Aston Villa. So to be able to do that, it felt like a striker's header, didn't it? The way he positioned himself, really did well. I think he's showing what he's capable of. I agree with Ross. I think that next season, assuming that's going to be in the Championship, I think he could be a really top player for that level. And he's showing that he's more than capable of doing it in the Premier League as well, which is what he's been desperate to show, because he hasn't had the opportunity that much over numerous years at West Ham. And I think he would have been really frustrated. He hasn't had the opportunity at Ipswich. So now he's got the chance, he's more than taking it.
Okay. Shall we hear from him? Because you spoke to him post-game. It seems a good time to put that in, and then we can talk obviously about the second half.
Performance this afternoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, good performance. Second half was grueling, but I thought everyone done brilliantly. I mean, to concede so early on in the second half, you've got another 45 minutes to, could say, hold out, but I thought we steadied the ship and tried to still take the game to them and looked dangerous on the counter-attack and when we built up through midfield and into the wide areas. So I thought we'd done really well second half, and it's a well-earned point.
Yeah, that second half says a lot about your mentality as a group. A lot of teams were probably folded after that first goal for them early doors second half.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always psychological. Like, you, the best team in the world could come and you concede a goal and then another goal and then another goal. So it's not easy. That's just the state of the game, and we tried to manage it as best as we could, and I felt that we did, every man on the pitch.
You didn't settle for the 2-2, did you? You had chances to score a third or a fourth goal, kept going at the end.
I think that's the thing. I think we've all season tried to keep going, and I think sometimes that's probably been to our detriment, but that's how we're going to play. We need to show how good we are against the best teams in the world, and I felt that we're finally clicking, and hopefully we can get some more results towards the end of the season.
How easy is it to kind of have that mindset? Because off the back of the Wolves one, I guess the outside noise, people who kind of were down now, that was the kind of what fans were thinking.
We showed it today. Wolves was the last game. We showed it here today. It was easy for us to maybe come here and not be at it and be lacklustre, but I think we showed that we all have the will to win, every single man involved with Ipswich Town, and we want to do the travelling fans proud, and we gave them something to celebrate today.
Must be a special moment on a personal level when that header found the far corner.
Yeah, exactly. Not scored in a while. I feel like it's been coming. I think we spoke at Bournemouth about that. Just good to contribute for the team. Obviously, it wasn't a win, but again, we take a draw, and on a personal note, really.
So that was Alex doing his best Brenna Woolley impression there. Also appeared to be some sort of lawn mowing going on in the background.
Yeah, so this was an interesting one, actually, because with different grounds, you go to different parts where, like, it's a lot of mixed zones these days. Chelsea's mixed zone wasn't in use because there was a medical incident outside the ground. Fingers crossed that's all okay, which meant that we got to go in the tunnel, which was fun. So we were stood where the players had walked out in the Chelsea tunnel, interviewing Ben Johnson there. Thank you for Ross for including all of my questions as well.
Hey, we can't have it all in. Other interesting point, I used to be a steward at Chelsea when I was in my brief period at uni. That was how I made a bit of money.
That's first up we heard this. I thought you were talking about this pre-match.
It just occurred to me. Yeah, I used to be a steward at Stamford Bridge. In the family section, that was some good times. Some very inebriated people I had to deal with. Anyway, speaking of inebriated people, Rossi, second half, as you say, you get to half time, 2-0 up, fantastic. And then you obviously want to keep it tight, get to at least 60 minutes. But sadly, that's not what happened.
Yeah, it went to shit, didn't it? 18 seconds into the game. I wasn't even ready, prepared. I was just sitting down, you know, ready to go. I was just chatting with another photographer. And then, yeah, Chelsea obviously get their goal. And, yeah, Cameron Burgess, I love Cameron Burgess. I think he's a good player, but he just sort of scroll right into the box. And obviously, they gave the goal to Cucurella originally, but it's gone down as actual Transavia own goal. One not to look back at. Not a good defensive display there. And, that's when you went, okay, Chelsea's going to come back into this. And obviously they did with a cracking goal from Jadon Sancho, to be fair, really good. Not what you want to do at start of a second half, concede that early on.
Did it feel inevitable, AJ? I mean, certainly when I thought it was 2-1, I thought, here we go, they're not going to win this. But being there watching it, what did it have that feeling to it once they got that early goal back in the second half? Did it feel like it was always going to go that way? How are Town doing at 2-1?
Yeah, 100% thought that was going to be... I mean, that was kind of at the point of the goal going in, because 18 seconds, and it's a moment where Town have come out, and I wouldn't necessarily even say they switched off, but Chelsea came at them with a lot of intensity and they weren't prepared. It's basically it. Davis was caught quite high. Burgess gets run rugged by Madueke, but he shouldn't be left exposed one-on-one in that position, and then it's just a ball into the box with lots of bodies. So no blame to Axel for being the last man to turn that one in, for sure. But definitely as they bring the ball back to kick off again, you're thinking, oh, here we go. And, you know, we've seen this story before against Tottenham where they get one back and you're thinking, you know, this is going to be trouble here, and Town hold on, defend really well, but you're thinking Chelsea, where they are in the league, the players that they've got, and the fact that they'd scored after 18 seconds into the second half, it felt like a big ask, and it felt like a big ask for Town to go and potentially go and get a third and try and kill off the game, something like that. But the way they approached it was really, really good. They had actually a couple of opportunities quite shortly after that. Hurst had one where he cuts inside on Colwill and flashes one just past the post from outside the box, which came really, really close. And there was another one where he then gets the ball from Ben Johnson's cross and heads wide. That's a really painful one because I think that that was a really strong goal-scoring opportunity. But the fact that they were able to kind of still come out with their shells and, yeah, they had to defend resiliently, but also had opportunities to go and get a third, I think, showed that they handled that really, really well. So it was a strong second-half performance despite the setback. And, yeah, first goal's a bit of a switch-off. The second one, as Ross has alluded to, is a screamer. It's a brilliant strike. But there's not that much to really kind of pick out and complain about because the way they approached that second half, I was really impressed by.
Do you know the hardest thing about being a steward, by the way, is not watching the game?
Yeah.
Because I was at a point where I had to sit in a line on the edge of the pitch and watching the crowd, obviously. And then there was someone in the corner, a superior steward, making sure that we weren't turning around and watching the game. So you've got these...
Who stewards the stewards.
Exactly. I'd have been 18, 19 at the time. 19 I'd have been. And you think, this is amazing. I'm going to get paid to sit and watch football. No. I was paid to sit on the side of the pitch and not watch football. Watch drunken people in the crowd. Anyway, I'm digressing. My life is a steward. So, yeah, they do get the second goal. Just before that, though, rewinding before we get to that goal, Rossi, Philogene comes on and gets hurt. And it looks like quite a bad one by the sound of it. What did you see? What did you make of it?
Once again, looking down, editing my photos, I look up. Jaden's on. Great. Love that. Good to see Jaden do something. And then, yeah, next time I looked up, he was down. And I was like, oh, no. And he didn't look good. And we found out it isn't too good. So, yeah, it's a shame for him, really, because once again, he's had a tough start to life as well at Town. He's had a few flashes, some good moments here and there. But I'm sure this is an opportunity to come on and try to carry the ball and, you know, try to make something out of nothing. But yeah, set back for him now. And yeah, it's probably him out for the season, most likely. So yeah, it's a shame. You never like to see a player go down injured, and especially when he just come on as well, you know, to get subbed off when he's just been subbed on. So yeah, all the best to Jaden with his recovery.
Yeah, it sounds like he's done his MCL, doesn't it? So another crucial, well, not crucial, another ligament injury. In his knee. If it is indeed the kind of last time we see Jaden this season, AJ, how do you reflect on his time at Town so far? Because it's obviously it took a while to get him here, and although we've seen signs, I mean, you know, he scored two goals at Old Trafford in the most underwhelming double we've ever seen at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
But I suppose largely you would say he's underwhelmed. Would you say?
In the time that he's been at the club, for sure, I think that we'll look back on this as a long-term signing. He's how old now? He's 20, 23. His Premier League experience is limited, and he's been kind of thrown into a relegation battle, having hardly played in the first half of the season, needing to get used to a different manager and different styles. And I think we'd be having a different conversation if Town had been able to get that deal over the line last summer and he'd had pre-season, he'd got up to speed, and then you could be looking at a totally different Jaden Philogene by the time that January came around and he'd had 6 months of playing under McKenna in the Premier League. But ultimately, fate had other ideas. It didn't happen, and he goes to Aston Villa. And that's always hard. And there are things that probably he could have done better. I think his off-the-ball work was a bit of an issue. He does still look very lightweight. And those will be things that he'll need to improve on. But I think in the long term, you're looking at a fantastic asset for the club. So assessing what he's done so far, underwhelming. Yeah, sure. I think we probably all hoped for a little bit more. I think that everyone has to understand that there are caveats to why that hasn't happened in the last few months and understand what he can bring going forward, because there's a reason why lots of the biggest clubs around Europe wanted him. There's a reason why he got brought back to Aston Villa. Look, we've seen what he's done in the Championship as well. So if that's where Town are going to end up, hopefully he can play a really, really big part in getting the club back up. And I think we can all be excited about what he's going to do in the mid to long-term future.
Yeah, hopefully he's not out too long. So he joins Wes Burns in the knee injury club, and obviously Chiro Bene. Interesting to see when those guys get back. MCL not as serious clearly as ACL,
but be still, about you'd say what, maybe two, three months is kind of the range.
Hopefully. I mean,
we're speculating here, aren't we?
Yeah, when you're talking about elite athletes, clearly, and the best of recoveries and you know, treatments and stuff, obviously they get better quicker than a normal human being. So hopefully, as you say, I would say probably three months or so, for depending on what he's actually done to the knee.
So that puts him in a good position. I'd say if you're going to do that injury, now's the time to do it. He's going to miss what's probably going to be a fairly meaningless run of games. He'll have his holidays where he's going to be recuperating, and then hopefully by the time that he starts to get back on grass will probably be the start of pre-season.
Yeah.
And hope that maybe Chio, who's obviously been out for longer and you have to be more careful with, is probably going to be on a similar timeline. Wes is the one, the way you'd look at it being longer, with it being an ACL. Yeah. Christmas maybe is what you're looking at. But it's still having those options back in, and Smodics is in the same boat as well. You'd probably hope that Smodics or Bene and Philogene would be players that could come back in at the start of pre-season, having had a lot of time now to rest and recuperate, and will be able to get right back up to speed very quickly. And then by the time that next season comes around, they'll be cliche klaxon. It'll feel a bit like new signings,
yes,
don't they?
Get in, have to say it. Rossi, okay. So we have the Philogene blow. Town is still 2-1 up. Then they're not 2-1 up because Jadon Sancho scores an absolute screamer. However, friend, he had a lot of space. Should he have been closed down a bit quicker?
Yeah, that's hindsight, you know. That's just hindsight. But once again, when you've got a quality player like Jadon Sancho, I know once again he's another player that's had his moments the last few years, but yeah, when you're given that too much space, he's just going to go for it, and Alex Palmer had no chance. Once again, a story of the season, maybe defensive issues at times, but then we've been solid as well. So it's just us, just the frustration this season. I will admit, when they did the equaliser, I thought, oh God, here we go. Chelsea are going to go and win this game. But thankfully, I'm hoping I've segued nicely onto Alex Palmer, because had him, I wish we had a time machine, because if we had a time machine, sign him in the summer and Tam would have stayed up, maybe.
I'm not sure that works, because they are still losing games with him in goal. But
True.
You have set it up again, Ross. You're on fire. So if you could ensure you have the sniffles for every podcast, that'd be tremendous. Because Alex Palmer is exactly where we have to go now, AJ. So there were two Palmers in this game. Only one of them stood out, though. Alex, because he kept Town in the game. And how good has he been? What a signing he's been.
There were a lot of Chelsea fans talking about, there's a big discussion at Chelsea at the moment about the goalkeepers, because Robert Sanchez has been the first choice. He was pretty poor, actually. Mm. Booted the ball. There's one bit in the first half where he boots the ball at Jack Clark, and Clark runs him. It's a great opportunity to score. Doesn't happen because he fires wide, and then from the resulting goal kick, Sanchez just kicks it straight out of play to loud jeers and boos. And yeah, you then have Chelsea fans that watch Alex Palmer and they're saying, who is this guy? Where has he come from? And a big comment that you always hear is, why is it always the opposition keepers that have the game of their lives against us? And I heard that a few times and I thought, he's had that game probably about three or four times since he's joined Ipswich, hasn't he? Brilliant, to be fair. He did really well in the early stages of the match because he had to face a lot of shots. He made 8 saves in total, but it's the latter stages where he's pulling out all the big ones. Two off the top of my head, goes down and denies Cole Palmer really well with a kind of a curling shot from, I think it's around the edge of the area, but it's one of those where Cole Palmer knows what he can do from that kind of range. Does really, really well there. Hated writing Cole Palmer shoots at Alex Palmer, basically. Not fun in the match report. But the save of the match comes in stoppage time, which we thought was actually a Townsend block at the time. And it's not till we saw the replay that as Enzo Fernandez is threaded into the box and has a brilliant opportunity to score, it goes over Townsend and it's Palmer's save to push it out. The angle, the ferocity of that shot to be able to make that save in such a short space of time, the reflexes, unbelievable. He had a couple more really good ones that can't come, it's not coming to my head at the moment, but there were some really impressive saves in there. And we said he'd be the kind of the person to do the basics, right? But he's saving the hard ones as well. He was absolutely excellent. He was Town's man of the match quite comfortably. It's probably one of the best individual performances that Town have had this season. And no wonder why Chelsea fans were leaving Stamford Bridge asking who he was, because, yeah, that was pretty exceptional.
Just waving out the window to my wife, who's just walking the dog in the wood at the background. Rossi, Alex Palmer, come on, let's keep talking about him. I still can't believe he didn't get nominated for Save of the Month, whatever it was, for that unbelievable save that he made. What game was that, by the way? Completely lost my
Villa. Mind. Aston Villa.
Villa, that was it. Unbelievable save. And he had another, in terms of this one that stands out as well, there was one from Big Trev, wasn't there, towards the end of the game as well, which looked like Chalabar had squandered, but I think it was actually a save. So Rossi, Alex Palmer, as you say, who knows what could have been had they had him at the start of the season, but they've got him now and he's going to be, we talk about going into next season, Ben Johnson being really good. Alex Palmer could well be the best keeper in the Championship next season.
Yeah, and I think he was already anyway at West Brom. I think he had already, you know, proven he's one of the best goalkeepers in that division. And yeah, he's been brilliant. And I sometimes what I do when I'm taking the pictures, when Town have got a corner, I quickly just look over, because that's the best chance to get a really good up-close picture of Alex Palmer, because obviously he comes nearly to the halfway line sometimes. And I just watch him just do loads of stretches. He just does loads of stretches. Like, modern-day goalkeepers, obviously, they're more limber and they're happy to do that. I think back in the day, I think goalkeepers are like, I'm not going to warm up, I'm not going to train, I'm going to do running, but Alex Palmer...
Just have a cigarette by the post, yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. But yeah, he was just doing everything. I'm like, and I think we had like two corners in quick succession and he just did the same warm up again. I went, you just done that, Alex. But yeah, honestly, he's incredible. He's basically a perfect goalkeeper for, you know, photographers. He's just always getting that perfect like picture, perfect sort of save. He's like, you know, he's making that save for the pictures, making that.
We've got a lot of pictures of him sort of making like the, as you say, the perfect kind of just stretching fingertips sort of style, haven't we?
Yeah, one for the cameras, that one, Alex. But yeah, once again, he's very brave with his feet as well. Once again, that's what McKenna wants to play, you know, that's modern goalkeepers for you, really, you know, with their feet, really calm and collected. And I think, I'm sure the back line are now happy and they're comfortable with a goalkeeper in that back of their net now, because he's making good saves and they're fine if they, you know, lose the ball, because he's there ready to pounce. So obviously we have lost games still, so it's not like, oh yeah, we brought Alex Palmer in, we've won all the games, but he has definitely kept out more goals than we were shipping, you know, before he signed.
Yeah, I remember watching, going back to keepers warming up while the game's going on, I remember watching Peter Shilton, who was my first story time with granddad. Alex rolled his eyes. It was my first football hero, Peter Shilton. Not massively a fan of his now, given what he's gone on to do since. But in terms of watching, I used to go and watch him play for Derby. And when the action was at the other end, he used to run between the edges of the 6-yard box, like kind of shuttle runs to keep warm. Which is then something I insisted that I did as a young want to be keeper. So interesting stuff. Insights there, Rossi. Anything else from this game then, AJ? I also want to ask you about Leif Davis, because obviously he's been out for a bit. He come back, started this game, got subbed off. I note that Stu said that Town looked a lot more solid defensively with Connor Townsend, which I guess is not a massive surprise, given that Townsend is, I guess, more of a pure defender. But is there, I don't want to say a debate, but is there an argument that we should maybe see a bit more of Connor Townsend?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's still, if Leif Davis hopefully is going to be at the club next season, then Davis and Townsend being the two left-back options in the Championship would be absolutely fantastic. If that's what it's going to be, that'd be great. With Davis's performance, I think that it was fine. I mean, it's not exactly the hardest, sorry, it's not exactly the easiest task in the world when you're coming up against a player like Madueke, and you could see that Chelsea kind of tried to prioritize attacking down that flank because they knew that isolating Davis would maybe lead to having a free run at the defenders, which they didn't get that much of, but they did obviously for the first goal. Thought defensively when he had the support there as well, he looked solid enough, but it did look more solid when Townsend came onto the pitch. I think the substitution was done because this is still a fairly nasty, I'd say, injury that Davis has come back from, and you have to be able to pace him. And I think it came actually I don't think it was as a result of it, but he had it was either a corner or a free kick that got played in, went over everyone, and Chelsea almost then went and scored from that ball when they counted up the other side. So, yeah, I think that shows that there's still a little bit of rustiness there. Of course, there can still be a debate, if you want to call it that, or a conversation about who should be getting minutes in the final few weeks of the season. I'd like to see a bit of both, maybe, because why not? Why not try and mix it around and give players opportunities in the final few weeks when relegation's confirmed? I'm just happy to have two strong options that I think are there, and two very different options. I think it is, nice to have.
Let me ask you this then. So we talk about going into the summer and who might be here next season. We've already talked about Ben Johnson and Alex Palmer will be here. Liam Delap, we expect, won't be here. Leif Davis, going into this season, we were talking about potentially getting picked for England and being this, that and the other and all that kind of stuff. Do you think there will be any interest in him in the summer, given what he's done for Town this season? Or are we going to be fairly confident that he'll be back at Portman Road next season?
I would be certain there'll be interest. Would there be interest that would tempt Ipswich into selling? I don't know what, obviously, the complexities of his new deal are. He signed this new contract. Is it going to be one where, is there a relegation release clause? You know, again, speculating. There could be whatever. But you would imagine it would be set at a pretty decent rate, because that tends to be, touch wood, what Ipswich do, is set these kind of fees quite high. With that in mind, would someone come out and pay, I'll pluck a number out of the air, 30 million for Leif Davis, 25 million? I'm not too sure. I do think that if the right offer came, it's a position where it's maybe easier to replace than some others. There are a lot of kind of similar players to Leif Davis that would come to mind. Obviously, he's a fantastic asset. He's a creator. He's, especially at championship level, I'd say, a good defender. He offers a lot, set pieces and open play. I would still expect him to be here, but I think that it's good that maybe we're not going to have the same kind of fanfare, are we? As the Delap thing is going to become a saga, let me tell you that.
Hooray!
It's going to be the Kieran McKenna exit links of 2025. Remember that saga from last year? It's going to be the same thing this year. Will we have that with Leif Davis? I don't think so. I think if he goes and there would be an offer for him, then it would be the right one and he'd go with everyone's best wishes. And if he stays, then I think he'll be the best left back in the Championship next season. And that's great.
I can't wait for the Delap transfer saga this summer. It's going to be amazing. Ross, I guess what I'm saying there is with Leif is it fair to say that his star isn't shining quite as brightly now as it was maybe a year ago?
Yeah, I'll say so. He's had a few okay moments this year, but he's making a step up, just like most of this, you know, his team is. So, I think there's been moments where he has sort of gone, he's had a tough moment there. But he's still a good age. He's obviously got 3 years left on his deal because he signed that new long-term deal. I'm sure he's got ambitions to be playing in the Premier League. Obviously, there was always that link to maybe going to Newcastle, joining his boyhood club and all that. But I think he needs to have another really good season under his belt. But then once again, for him, I do feel sorry for him because he has played a lot of football and he has to work very hard. The position he plays, what McKenna wants him to do. I'm not surprised he's been getting injured recently. And of course, he's had a bit of illness as well, bless him.
Bless him, bring it out.
There we go. But yeah, probably his star is not as lighting up as much as it was before. But as AJ just said, he will be the best left back in the Championship, just what he was like last season. So I have a feeling he'll stay here next season, get us back to the Premier League, and then he'll star for us in the Premier League the following season. So we still love Leif here, don't we? And he just had obviously a tough season because of the step up.
Yeah, I like it. We're going to have a lot of best ofs in the Championship next season, aren't we, by the sound of it? But of course, one of the reasons that we're going to be back in the Championship, AJ, which I guess we should talk about now, moving away from the game, although it was an issue again in this game, is this Achilles heel, if you like, of dropping points all over the gaff. 27 now. Clearly, you're going to drop some points in the Premier League because it's the best league in the world. But it's becoming a recurring theme, a narrative from the season when we reflect on it. Clearly, it's not as easy as just going, well, that's why they're doing it. Stop it. But in terms of reasons, what would you throw into the mix for that?
Yeah, 27 points dropped then. So beneath that, you've got Southampton 25, Fulham 22, Brentford 21, Tottenham 21. For context, Wolves, who they've been chasing, have dropped 13 from winning positions. West Ham have dropped 12. Now, with any numbers, you have to also look at the other side of it, where to drop those points, you have to be in a good position in the first place. So you're still leading a game. You're still taking the initiative. You're scoring first, getting into essentially into a position to throw it away, which sounds quite bad when you say it that way, but it shows that there is, it can be used as an argument to say that Town have been competitive, which I think we all agree they have been. So there is that in terms of why it's happened, and they've then gone and lost those leads. I think, the obvious one's quality, the gap in quality. So when you get into the latter stages in particular, and you've got, I don't know, Chelsea bringing on Jadon Sancho, for example, a man who once cost 100 million, it's not quite the same as Town bringing on players from League One, for example. So there's that. Obviously, then you've got the quality on the pitch, and maybe that if a top team falls behind, all of a sudden something can click and they come back into it. When that starts happening a few times, then you can start to make a case for it maybe being a bit of a mentality issue as well. Will we know for sure that's what it is? Of course we won't, but it has happened a lot to the point where you could ask the question, when they take the lead in games, is there now a psychological element of saying, oh, actually, you know what? We're not confident of holding this lead. It's good that we've scored. We know we've got there, but do we feel confident doing that? In the same way that when you start losing games at Portman Road, does that then become a psychological element there as well, where it's something in the brain that starts to do it? So I think those are the things. I think the biggest thing is ultimately the gap in quality and being able to bring players on. You can pick out individual errors, for example, the Muric one at Brentford or something like that, and you can look at other individual bits like the dodgy penalty red card thing against Leicester and others. It's probably an amalgamation of all of those different things. But for me, it's just the fact that Premier League teams have really good players who can come on and change games, like Ipswich did last season in the Championship, where they were better than almost every other team in the league, and they could bring on great players and change games and win points from losing positions. And they were great at that. And this has become the flip, because the gap up to the Premier League is bloody massive.
Absolutely is. Is there anything else from this game you want to talk about before we move on? I've got a couple of other things I want to talk about with you. Anything to mention?
Player-wise, I think just a few to pick out. I thought
the
centre-backs were great. Obviously, the one moment from... I think actually both the centre-backs had one nervy moment. You had the one that Burgess had leading up to the goal. O'Shea played a back pass to... God, I don't want to talk about back passes from O'Shea again. O'Shea played a back pass through to Palmer, where... it was Jackson got to it, and poor Alex Palmer had to take a really heavy blow to the head after that one. But other than that, I thought they were really, really good aerially as well. O'Shea is just a monster, isn't he? And the Burgess is as well. Both physical, headed clearances galore. It's exactly what you want. Axel, again, I thought was excellent. I've mentioned it before, but my favourite part was when he loses the ball, gets a heavy touch and gets carried down the side, and all of a sudden Chelsea play the ball from left to right, and Axel's popped up again with a challenge to make up for his error. Thought Sam Morsy looked better than he has done in recent weeks. I thought that it's just a really strong, defensive, resilient performance. Those are the players who really kind of had hearts on their sleeves kind of moments, and when the results are going to get to a stage where they don't really matter and the performances start to count, those are going to be the ones that the fans appreciate. So plenty of real standouts there.
Rossi, talk to me then about covering a game at Stamford Bridge. Give us the behind-the-scenes stuff. I know the video's gone out this morning. What did you make of Stamford Bridge as an experience in terms of covering a game professionally there?
A bit of a library, to be honest. A lot of tourists, I have to admit. The away end, shout out to everyone who was in that away end. If you're listening to this right now, unbelievable atmosphere from the first whistle to the final whistle. And I love the togetherness with the players and McKenna and the whole team with the fans just supporting. You know, we all know we're down. But it was good that it was just togetherness there. Because when you see teams like Southampton, you know, there it's a circus right now, and it's not good. You know, not good vibes, as AJ says. With us though, there's good vibes there, and we all just know the position we're in. But yeah, the day as a whole, I hate Premier League grounds, because where you have to get your accreditation, for me anyway, as a photographer, they don't care about us. As we've already mentioned, we're peasants. Sometimes we don't even get food, which I know I shouldn't be complaining
outrageous.
About. Outrageous. Unbelievable. But today we got food. For this game, we got food. It was lovely. Yeah. It was like a three-course bloody meal. But you had to get to one, I had to go to one place to pick up my accreditation. Then I had to go around the whole ground again to get into the media room. And then I thought I was going to be allowed to maybe just go pitch side from this entrance. But no, I had to go around the whole ground again. I know.
It's worth tiny things. Violin. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. But I'm like, I'm getting my steps in, which is good. Yeah. I'm like, surely there's a better system here, boys. I even said to a steward, like, surely, mate, I'll just go there. And he's like, oh, unfortunately not. I was like, okay.
Don't you knock the bloody stewards.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, true. you know, your posse there.
My pals, yeah.
Yeah, the stewards union, as you say. But yeah, it was obviously London away days. It's a close trip for us, you know, down the A12 and stuff. But you have to obviously go through central London, which is never fun.
Right, mate, you're not driving.
True. Shout out to Joe and then Saj, who gave me a lift back. But yeah, not a bad day overall. Obviously, you know, four goals scored. The weather was not too bad. There was a bit of rain, though, in the second half. I was like, what is going on? It wasn't forecast to rain, but April showers and all that jazz. But yeah, as a whole, not a bad day to cover. Although I was separated with AJ and Stu for most of it. I saw them briefly in the media room. And then I had to say goodbye. I was like, bye, boys. And I didn't see him. This is actually the first time I've seen AJ since we saw her in the press box. So, hi, AJ.
What did you make of it, AJ, from your side of things? Is obviously far more important. A writer, but I that snappers are not really seen as important. Probably because they spend most of their time moaning, if I'm honest. what was it like for you?
I like the Stamford Bridge kind of, it's a bit like a little village they've got around the stadium, which is quite interesting. Like lots of different, I mean, they've got the hotel in the stadium, they've got lots of different restaurants and bars, lots of kind of murals and bits like that. So that was really nice. It was hard to get in. I've heard a lot about the food at Chelsea, and that was like before all the media scrand stuff here. It was always Chelsea's kind of the pinnacle because they do buffets and stuff like that. And it was really good. I liked the fry-ups. I also got, which I felt a little bit weird for doing, but they had a cheese selection there. And I went and got my cheese board with all my crackers, which was great.
Oh, nice.
Felt really, really posh. And I turned to Stu at one point, and Stu kind of, I think, raised an eyebrow at me getting it, and I said, look, at the end of the day, we don't know when we're going to be back at another top six club for this kind of hospitality. I'm going to make the most of it.
Fill your boots.
And he kind of had a moment where he looked down, and then all of a sudden he came back with a cheese board of his own, which made me laugh. Stu went for a little bit of everything, which was great. Experience of covering at Stamford Bridge, the press box was terrible, to be honest. The view was really weird. It was a bit like Leeds, where half the kind of view is cut off, so you're watching from ground level, but it's like almost looking through a letterbox kind of thing. So not the best angle in the world. Again, tiny violins and all that. Favorite moment from that experience for sure was when Stu was working, his laptop was about to die, and our old friend Andy Warren came over and said, your laptop's about to die, mate. I'm going to get your charger. He went to the bag, got the charger out and went to plug it in. After about 5 seconds, Stu went, that's not my charger. Turns out Andy had just been rummaging through some random bloke's bag who stood behind him like that.
What are you doing?
The random bloke was really not impressed with him either, did not find it funny at all. There's your fun story from the press lounge featuring Andy Warren. All in all, yeah, fun experience, good day, nice weather, good food, good stuff.
Good old Hutch, man. I like the idea of you just sat there with an aged Stilton and a fine port pre-game. Who says that the media are pampered, eh? I've just thought of a question, actually, which I'm going to ask you both now, live. Get your snap verdicts, because I did a bit last week. Oliver Holt's ranking of the 1 to 92. He's been to all the Football League grounds. Now, clearly, you boys have been to a lot of Football League grounds. He put Portman Road 36th out of the 92, had some very complimentary things to say. His top three from memory were Stockport, Anfield, and Exeter, St. James Park, for various reasons. The only local ground, you like this, AJ, to finish above Portman Road was the dear old Abbey Stadium, which he had 32nd. So, as I say, veterans, both of you, have a lot of football grounds. I don't know if you actually know how many you've been to, but what would be in your kind of top and bottom places for grounds that you've been to? Start with you, AJ.
I've got a little app where I can track all the ones I've been to.
How many have you been to then?
All in all, across every, like, all grounds full stop, I've been to 101. When it loads, I'll be able to tell you how many of the 92 I've done.
101, you mean like non-league as well as kind of European? And
non-league, abroad, everything. Yeah. I'm going to see if I can figure out how to. There will be a way for me to figure out what my 92 is. But, yeah, in terms of the best, I always love the City ground. And it's weird because the press facilities, they're all right. They're okay. But it's a proper stadium that. It's got the kind of the modern vibe to it. It's a brilliant atmosphere. It's, for my money, the best away end in the Premier League, for sure. I think you could probably extend that down quite a lot as well. It's located just off the banks of the River Trent. It's really near to Notts County. I really love the City Ground. It's probably my favourite. 75 of the 92, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
So that's not terrible. Any others that stand out to me? Best atmosphere I've seen would be, I've got to be honest, I think it's Elland Road from the Leeds 4-0 win against Ipswich. That was quite something that afternoon. Thought that was brilliant. Obviously taking Portman Road out of it, because Portman Road obviously has the best atmosphere. But apart from that, not a massive fan of covering games at Elland Road, but the atmosphere was brilliant. Have to throw Cambridge in there. Even though they've only just got press desks in about like the last 6 months, and you're working off your lap before then. As for the worst, I feel really bad throwing teams under the bus.
Well, let me tell you this, AJ, because the worst actually has a link to you. 92nd and dead last was Millwall.
Yeah, I do think that might have something to do with the Daily Mail getting banned from Millwall after the.
Yes, he did. I mean, to be fair, he did say he's been banned.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I wouldn't have the den near the top, to be honest, but I definitely wouldn't have it anywhere near the bottom, and it definitely does have its charm to it, especially when they can sell it out. The ones that I haven't liked, honestly, and I'm not saying this with any tint of bias, London Road, Peterborough. my biggest gripe is that the press seats are so far away from the benches. It's that you're slumped over like this. It's horrible. Crew has a lot of stairs. I don't like Crew for the lot of stairs, because every time you want to get up or down and do anything, you're doing all those stairs up to the press box, mate. Got to be honest, West Ham, it's not good. It's not great. Any others that stand out? Leighton Orient's a bit weird because you have to go up in a lift and they take you to cover games. And like a breakfast bar style thing with stools you have to sit on. Both Crew and Leighton Orient, I've had to clear bird excrement off my desk. So that's nice. Any others that come to mind? Probably not. If I think of any, I'll bring them up down the line. But yeah,
probably do a show on this, because clearly you've been to a lot. You boys have been to a lot of grounds. I bet there'd be a lot of people be interested in this. So maybe something we can do in the summer. Rossi, I'm willing to bet money that you have no idea how many of the 92 you've been to. Unlike AJ, you do not have an app telling you that.
Yeah, do not have an app, but I am getting close, to be fair. I know I'm actually in the 80s. I think I'm
are you? Close. How do you know that?
Because I've just been to loads of grounds. I just know them. I've been to every Premier League ground. So that's 20 done.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of the Championship, done most League One, done a lot of League Two. Thankfully, I've done a lot of League One. Because it switches 4 years.
I suppose in terms of following the women's team as well, you've done some grounds you wouldn't necessarily have been to otherwise. So where would you say are the best ones and worst ones for you?
Start with worst. Hate Birmingham.
Okay.
I like Birmingham because I actually broke a camera there. So that's probably why.
That's personal. But
that's down there for me as well, actually. I like Birmingham towards the bottom.
Don't like Birmingham. Peterborough. I don't like Peterborough either. You know, it was just not good. Sorry, Joe. I'm big friends with Joe, the club photographer there. But yeah, not a fan. Do you know what? Fratton Park. I don't really like Fratton Park. Even though it's, you know, sort of iconic. Where the photographers sit, you're in a bit of like a trench, pretty much. And I just don't like how it is. I don't know if it's changed this season because they're in the Championship now, but when we were in League One, didn't enjoy taking photos there. But favourite ones, like, once again, biased here, but I do like Portland Road because it's just easy, isn't it? Just to wake up and you're there. But yeah, I do like covering Portland Road, definitely with the new facilities and stuff.
Yeah.
But other ones, do you know what? I like Plymouth despite it being so far away, but it's just, I've always enjoyed my trips to Plymouth. It looks like they got a late win recently against Sheffield United, so they may stay up. You never know.
As a city as well, isn't it? Like, yeah. I know the stadium's fine. I quite like it. It's great atmosphere that you can get down there. But going down to the city, I really like as well. I want to ask a question for the worst as well. Would you put Huddersfield towards the bottom with their photographer treatment?
Yeah, Huddersfield, Middlesbrough.
It was Barnsley one as well. I remember you boys, certainly Stu and Hutch used to talk about Barnsley, where half the stand was condemned. You used to have to go and urinate on a wall, essentially.
They give sweets at Barnsley. They give you bags of sweets, which at League One level is absolutely unheard. Well, yeah, you're a photographer, so. But yeah, I always like that as well. Yeah, I'm going to throw Stockport into the mix. And I know that because Oliver Holt is a Stockport fan.
Yeah,
that's why he's done it. But I quite like that one. And it's the traditional grounds as well. It's the ones that are a bit old-fashioned. Fram Park's one. Kenilworth Road's another as well. They're all a little bit run down. But my God, have they got some good spirit.
Yeah, this feels like it could be a wider show. I feel like there's more to this, the way we're talking. Yeah. The way you boys are talking about this gets you involved as well. I bet we could have a...
He's done loads. We've had a few conversations about this before, and he's got a fair few. I feel like we could definitely do like a top 10 and worst 10.
Absolutely. What?
I've got a rogue one. Maybe it isn't rogue, but like, I did enjoy my trips to Morecambe. We went there a few times. I had a really nice pie
the best
as well.
Pies. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, you have to pay a quid for them, which you don't usually have in football grounds when you're a reporter, but it's worth paying the pound for them because they are award-winning pies, as they like to stress, and they are brilliant. And the people up there are great. It's a long old way, and it's cold, and it's a bit grim, but they're good people there.
Home of Tyson Fury, of course, Morecambe. Mm. And the Morecambe and Wise statue, isn't it?
Yeah, been there, did that one. That was
excellent.
Cool.
This feels like a show, a really good show we can do in the summer, so let's look forward to that. The other thing I want to mention before we go, Rossi, coming back to you, is, of course, we know the men are likely to be in the Championship next season. The women are also, barring a miracle, I mean, this would be a miracle greater, on the verge of Easter, greater than the return of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ, if Town women don't go up, because I think hashtag have got to win 32-0 to prevent them on the final day of the season, which is a week on Sunday, Rossi. This is great, though, isn't it? Because obviously you've followed the ladies' team for a long time, and they're gonna get this promotion. They're going to be in the Championship next season.
Finally, it feels like the men in League One, because it took them a long time to get our League One, and now basically the women's team are in the League One in women's football terms, because they're in the third division of, you know, women's football. Mm. So they're pretty much up. I know I've just sort of seen some quotes from Joshi, and it's sort of mixed emotions, because even though he deep down they know they're up,
you can't celebrate just yet though until it's official, can you?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't want to go too early, but yeah, I can't see hashtag scoring 32 goals, especially when they're playing Oxford.
32-0.
I can't see Ipswich losing either.
Yeah.
Against Cheltenham, a team they beat, I think, 7-0 earlier in the season or something like that. So yeah, it's going to be a party down at Felixstowe. I know a few people went to the MK Dons game, which obviously they won 11-0, which I feel sorry for MK. There's a story there because... basically, last season, they got rid, but basically their manager left and then basically took all their best players to Bedford. And they've obviously now, this season, just been playing their under-21s, which probably, they're probably not at the level just yet to play at this division.
Level, yeah.
But at the end of the day, you play against a team that's in front of you, and they were just ruthless once again. So I think it's now like 36 goals they've scored against MK in three games, which is madness. But yeah, they're going to finally do it, and Joe Sheehan and the team deserve it because they've worked hard the last few years. Obviously, they really recruited well in the summer. And yeah, they're now going to make that step up to the championship, which I'm sure the club, that's what they've been wanting for a long time. And I'm sure they're going to get even backed even more of the championship. And that's where you can then sort of judge this team to see if they can. Obviously, Sophie Pescott, I think, scored six goals.
Six goals she got yesterday. That's all right, isn't it?
Incredible. But yeah, looking forward to players like Sophie Pescott, Natasha Thomas, those sort of players who have been here for a long time to see if they can make that step up in the championship, playing against some, you know, better opposition. And yeah, it's going to be a party. Obviously, yeah, the men's team, not had a great season, but the women's team, go and support them down at Felixstowe. They're playing Cheltenham Town, as you said, the week after next. And yeah, it's going to be a party down there and a big celebration.
Yeah, week on Sunday, that'll be. So Town are playing the Saturday, aren't they? Because quite a lot of time this season, the games have clashed in terms of Town playing Sunday as well. But this time it won't, and it'll be a tremendous occasion down at Felixstowe a week on Sunday as promotion is sealed. Friends, anything else to bring up before we take our leave? We've done just over an hour. The grounds chat swelled the length of this podcast, and it has now given rise to an idea for a special show going forward. AJ, while you're off sitting in your hot tub, did you sample any more Stardust Spirits?
I didn't have any with me, no. Pathetic. I do feel like, I'm sorry, I do apologise, but I do feel like as I get towards the end of my little bottles, I might need to go back and order a big one, definitely the chocolate. I liked a lot. Yeah, I will be using the code to get a special discount.
And the code, of course, is KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk. The chocolate rum, you've said before, is a big favourite of yours. I've always, since trying them, I've said that the single malt and the cask aged rum are both really, really good stuff. Get involved with that. Rossi, anything from you?
Don't think so. Just hope everyone has a good week and hopefully I feel a bit better. I'm going to go and have a lie down. So, see you in a bit.
You're not going to have a lie down because you've got a full working day ahead of you, mate. So, you won't be lying horizontal. I need work from you. okay then, friends, just a reminder to support our sponsors. As I've already mentioned, use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk and get 20% off all that excellent stuff they've got there. We've already talked about what we enjoy there. I've still got a few to work my way through, which I may do over the Easter weekend. We'll see. And also, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that'd be great. Just lift us visibility wise in the charts, help more people find us. Follow us across all social medias, Kings of Anger on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky. I know we're rapidly gaining followers and viewers on TikTok off KOA Live 2. AJ, so come and join the party there if you're a TikToker. If not, friends, we'll speak to you later on this week as we build up towards Arsenal. As Rossi says, enjoy the sun. I don't think it's going to be here for much longer. Have a great start to your week and we'll be back next time.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.